This episode is brought to you by NordVPN. Listen up, nerds. No. Good evening, Mr. and Mrs. America, from border to border and coast to coast and all the ships at sea.
What?
Hello, friends. Do you have a computer? Of course you do, because it's not 1987. Hell, you're listening to this on some kind of computer right now. But do you have a VPN?
Oh,
what's a VPN, you ask? Well, my friend, a VPN is a virtual private network and it offers two key benefits: enhanced privacy and security online. But VPNs do a lot more than that. VPNs shield your IP address, change your browsing location, and make online life easier. It's all about safety and security, my friends. But like everything else in life, it's also about watching TV. Don't let your paid subscriptions go to waste. I use NordVPN to access my home content while I'm traveling. Wink, wink. Plus, secure your connection on public Wi-Fi in airports, hotels, cafes, anywhere you go when you're traveling. There's over 6,300 servers in 111 countries, and you can find a nearby server for the best VPN speeds. NordVPN is easy to use. Connect with one click or enable auto-connect for zero-click protection. And it's got amazing speed. NordVPN is one of the fastest VPNs out there. And with just one NordVPN account, you can use it on 6 devices. It supports every major platform: Windows, Android, iOS, macOS, Linux, even Android TV. I think those are all real. Don't miss out on all the awesome benefits for using a VPN. Go to nordvpn.com/ifanboy today for a risk-free 30-day money-back guarantee. The link's in the show notes. Once again, that's nordvpn.com/ifanboy.
This show is sponsored by BetterHelp. You ever feel like you really need to get something off your chest? This is like a real thing. Like, if you're mad, if you're upset, if there's something going on, like there's often for me an idea. Maybe it's a wrong. Maybe it's a moment. It's an injustice. It's something that just you keep going on and on, over and over in your mind about it, and like that can create anger and resentment or shame, whatever it is. And very often, I have found, I am not a therapist, I have found that when you let it out, when you give it voice, when you say it out loud, sometimes it makes you feel better because you've expressed it. And sometimes it makes you realize like, oh, this is not a big deal, but it's been stuck in my head. So you give voice to those things, and it can make you feel a lot better. And shock of all shocks, therapy is one of those things that can help you do that. It can help you be able to say those things in a place where you don't need to worry about the repercussions of it, work your way through it, figure out coping skills, how to get around it, you know, find ways to deal with that stuff instead of letting it fester. If you are thinking of starting therapy, if anything I said sounds familiar, you're like, oh, maybe my life would be a little better if I could deal with that kind of thing, you should give BetterHelp a try. It's fully online. It is convenient, flexible. It is suited to your schedule. That's the idea. That's what they're going for. You can fill out a brief questionnaire to get matched with a licensed therapist. That's a big deal. You can switch therapists at any time for no additional charge. That personal connection, I believe, to be super important. Again, I'm not a professional. Get it off your chest with BetterHelp. Visit BetterHelp.com/ifanboy today. You get 10% off your first month. That is BetterHelp, HELP.com/ifanboy.
You are listening to a special edition of the iFanboy podcast, an interview with Ed Burns and Jimmy Palmiotti, writers of Doc Walloper. Hey, welcome to a special edition of the iFanboy podcast. We are here because Ron recently had the opportunity to speak with Ed Burns and Jimmy Palmiotti, the writers of Doc Walloper, the new miniseries from Virgin Comics. Doc Walloper is the story of John Smith, who rises through the ranks of 1920s underworld New York, and it touches upon Prohibition and the gangland warfare between the Italians and the Irish, and all the fun stuff that goes along with it. So if you're a big fan of New York accents, this is the special edition podcast for you.
You've been co-writing with Ed Burns, Doc Walloper for Virgin Comics. How did you get involved in that project?
I think Ed or either Virgin approached Ed or Ed approached Virgin. I'm not sure which one. And they wanted to, you know, have him work with a comic book writer. And I guess they showed Ed some different writers' styles or books or something. And you know, I want to say I got lucky. and he read some of the Monolith books that Justin Gray and I wrote, and the books took place, a large percentage of the story took place in the 1920s in New York and early 30s. And I think Ed found the right kind of flavor he wanted there, plus a fellow New Yorker that kind of understood, you know, what Ed was talking about was something of a perfect match for him. So they got us together in a room, and we got to know each other, and it's been a loving relationship ever since.
Yeah, it's cool. So, like, when we saw the solicit for the book and we saw that he was writing it and you were on board, I mean, I know Connor and I were talking about it. We said, wow, that sounds like a perfect match, given his, you know, he's an Irish New Yorker and you're an Italian New Yorker, and given what the book is about, it just seems to kind of click. Was that already set in place before you came on board, or did you add your bit of flavor to it?
Well, I mean, the book is about Irish and Italian gangs, and then, you know, obviously the main characters that we follow as he works his way through them, and it's just funny it happens that way, but we're both not gang material, but we definitely understand the history of our cultures, especially in New York. It seemed like a natural thing, you know, and as I sat with Ed and we talked about stuff, we have a lot in common. We both have supermodel wives. Amanda will make me extra pasta tonight.
Nice.
For that one. And we had a lot in common, and you know, we both had a love for the material and for the era that the book happens during, we just clicked on a number of levels, and again with the Doc Walliper, Ed came in with the basic premise, so I had to kind of sit with him, and we kind of mixed it up a little bit and added some stuff and made it a little bit more over the top, kind of, you know, bigger feel to it, and I think it's working out pretty good so far.
Cool. So it was a true collaboration. It wasn't just kind of he handed this kind of treatment and then you kind of fleshed it out, or I mean, what was the working process like?
He did walk in with the premise and the outline,
right?
And then what we did is we sat and we went through it, and we changed some stuff and we added some stuff. So, you know, it is Ed's idea out of the gate.
Right.
You know, we just collaborated on mixing it up a little bit and then formatting it for comics, because Ed's not familiar with comic books too much. So
right. Because I find that really interesting, because I mean, I followed Ed's career, and as a kind of writer director, kind of he's almost akin to the writer comic creator aspect of just the two different mediums. So
absolutely. Yeah. I mean, obviously, you know, Ed has that thing where he kind of set himself up to, I want to do this, and I'm going to do this, and nobody's going to get in my way, and I admire that kind of person, because, you know, it's too easy in our lifetimes to be laid back about what we do or not pursue it because of roadblocks and everything, and he's a guy that kind of did it his own way and is still doing it. I mean, even up to the past month where he's the first one to have a full released feature on iTunes,
yeah.
You know? I mean, it's the first one ever done. So he's groundbreaking all the time. And you know, he has that curiosity thing, and comics just seems, you know, look, film people love comics, comic people love films. I think the two are so closely related,
yep.
And we're seeing it every year that it's insanely related. You know,
yeah, they're just, you know, they're coming closer and closer, especially with all the movies being based on comics and vice versa.
Oh, yeah. I mean, and we're learning, you know, it's a learning process as well.
Yeah.
Because there's still crap coming out, but there's also great stuff. I just saw the trailer for Iron Man, and I'm like, that looks just so cool, you know?
Yeah,
really. And I think like 10 years ago, that would have been a big problem to do.
Yeah, totally. I mean, the technology has caught up with it, and now they can actually visualize what you guys have been visualizing in comics for years. So
Right. And they've become more savvy with how to handle the material.
Right. Doing a book like Doc Walliper, how much kind of research goes into a period story like this? I mean, do you find yourself going to the library before, you know, sitting down and writing it, or...?
I purchased a bunch of books.
Yeah.
Just to basically get the era. You know, I had a lot of research from the monolith, so I purchased some stuff. I got some books on slang of the era, basic timelines of what was happening in the world in the 20s. And then as I started digging into the script, I would, you know, I'm like in the beginning, I opened up with an airplane flying over New York. Well, I had to find out what airplanes were commercially available.
Right.
And then I had to find out what the city of New York looked like, because the artist is not a New Yorker. And and then, you know, what the docks looked like and what part of Manhattan had the docks. And, you know, so as I'm writing each page, I'm realizing, well, thank God for the internet, number one. You know, because, I mean, it used to be that, yeah, I would be sitting in the library with around 100 books open and a million dimes so I could make Xeroxes. And so you research the hell of it. And our research goes, you know, it goes from the language to the art of the time to the music. I mean, if I'm going to have music playing, I reference a song of the time. And then I look, you know, you have to look up what songs were big and, you know, it's every little detail. It's the stuff that a reader should never worry about, but as they're reading it, you know, it makes it truer to the story. You know, I always say you never focus on it so much. I do it in Jonah. We do it in Jonah Hex as well. You know, just make it that's business as usual, and the reader will absorb it as that being the error. And, you know, the language itself defines it as well, because the language was a lot different back then. There's a lot, a whole different books of slang that, you know, when you read it, it can apply in a sentence, but it, alone you might wonder what the hell I was trying to say.
Right.
You know? But yeah, it's research heavy, and I think, you know, I have a ton of respect for the people who read comics, so I don't want to give them a half-done anything, ever.
Right.
So yeah, you know, with every project I take on, there's probably like 6 or 7 books bought, and a whole bunch of print out, and I make little folders.
Yeah.
You know, like as I'm talking to you now, I have a Doc Walliper folder that's, you know, like 2 inches thick.
Wow.
And it's all the stuff I printed out and reference and language and, you know, all these crazy slang of the 20s books and, you know, stuff like that. Like I said, it just makes it ring truer when you read it. I think the research definitely makes this book shine a little bit.
Right. And by product of that, you become almost an expert of the time that you're writing about. You know, like you do you find yourself kind of working that slang into your conversations and stuff like that?
Yeah, you know, it's funny because I tend to look up, well, the slang is funny, you know, because, you know, if I throw it at some people now, they're like, what are you saying? You know, so I really don't throw around the slang. I think there's funny stuff, like somebody getting excited and going, applesauce! Like, it makes no sense now, but then that was sort of like saying, holy crap,
right.
You know? But there's things like then where, like, all wet still describes the same things, or the Bronx cheer,
yep.
Which was, you know, even a blind date, and those were just regular words at the time, so there's a lot of things, you know, even the big cheese
yep.
is still used the same way. But then, you know, not too many people are minding their beeswax these days. You know, or beat one gums, you know, somebody's beating his gums. But we know what that means.
Right.
But we don't use the cat's meow. When's the last time you called a girl a cat's meow?
We should bring that back. That's a good one.
I like that. Yeah. I want a drugstore cowboy.
Yeah.
It's a funny one. You know, a guy hangs around street corner picking up girls at yep. the drugstore cowboy. Yep. I love that one.
Yeah.
The one that would apply to my Saturday nights is Dead Soldier. You know what that is?
No, what does that mean?
That's an empty beer bottle.
Wow.
So, you know, it's like, do me a favor, babe. Move those dead soldiers out of the room.
That's
it works
good
in a sense, you know? There's some funny ones, you know?
Yeah, totally.
And again, some we still use and some is just gone.
Yeah.
You know, some, I mean, gams and, you know, get a wiggle.
Yeah.
Get a wiggle on. You know, we understand what it means, but God, you know, if somebody said that to you, you'd go, dude. What's wrong with you? You know.
Yeah. So how much research into the actual gangs in New York did you guys do? I mean, is that another area that you've learned about, or
it's you know it's about mob gangs, not street gangs.
Right.
I did this somewhat. You know, Ed did a lot of research, and then when I brought in, you know, there's a part I know about them, but I don't want to reference specific ones.
Right.
You know, the purpose of the comic, and again, one day a film, is that, you know, when Ed first came in, he had this very specific, here's the year it's going to happen, and here's the people who are based on real people. And by the time we left the room, we decided that, no, we'd probably look at it as more like a 300 or a Sin City thing where it's the 20s.
Right.
You know, so I can do, like, you know, 5 things at the same time. I can do a lit-up Times Square and also do airplanes and also do, you know, whatever I cover. We can cover Prohibition and we can cover gangland murders and all this kind of stuff and make it the era, you know. And I like the idea of, you know, taking, it gives us more of a palette to work with. And I think creating your own characters instead of basing it on real ones, I think for somebody like Ed, it's really important to make it his own, you know. And we had that conversation and we decided to go that way.
Right.
You know, if I was history, you know, Jonah Hex, we do the same thing with Jonah Hex. I keep bringing back Hex, but where it's not about the actual year. It's just about, this is the West.
It becomes almost a setting, almost, you know.
Right. Like, I mean, you know, we've done things with Tesla and stuff, and we've dated the stories in later years, you know. But again, we want everybody to understand the book. The book shouldn't just be for people who live in New York to understand. It should be able to be absorbed by the world. And, you know, a lot of people have seen movies
right.
about the 20s, but there's, you know, it's another person's version of what the 20s are.
Right. So in reality, though, the Italian mob was essentially able to usurp the Irish. Is that going to be reflected in Doc Walliper and why?
In a subtle way. We're not going to go we're not going to go so history heavy.
Yeah.
You know, because the Italian gangs, you know, look, both gangs were crazy. New York. Yep. I mean, and you know, it was a back and forth war.
Yep.
At times. And then when, you know, when drugs started getting more into the gang business, the, you know, the mob business, you know, things changed a little bit and things, you know, quieted down, and then they moved to Chicago. So there's a lot of different things going on. We're going to reference, the book is seen through the eyes of Smith, John Smith, and Bootsy, his friend, best friend Bootsy.
Yeah.
So all this stuff's going on, but literally we're taking a backseat to these two characters, and we're seeing how, you know, two schlubs from the streets can kind of get involved in a world bigger than themselves and then take it on in their own way, you know. And it is an underdog story, but at the same time, you know, Doc Wallaper isn't a clear-cut hero.
Okay.
Because he is a guy that's going after his own thing. So, you know, we're very... It's funny. It's sort of like heroes by circumstance, but at the same time, they're still mobsters.
Right.
You know, like Sopranos. Like, look, you wouldn't call any of those guys heroes, but there's times where you're watching it where you're rooting for the guys. You know, you're rooting for Tony, even though in your head you're like, you know, the next scene he beats up this poor kid, and you're like, oh, my God, this guy's a monster.
Yeah.
You know, so it's complex characters, but that's the fun of doing not only an era piece, you know, but doing a book like for Virgin Comics where they're like, anything goes.
Yeah. So I was working with Virgin, been really kind of, because they're kind of the new publisher on the block, and you know, they had all those kind of Indian books come out, but now they're starting to see some other stuff like Dan Dare and Doc Walloper and the Guy Ritchie book and stuff like that. Are they pretty easy to work with? Or?
Yeah, I mean, it's been a breeze. I mean, you know, where I'm used to watching my language or excessive violence or, you know, sexuality, they're like, just write what you think is best for the story.
Yeah.
And they said, we'll take care of the rest, you know. So there's a lot of freedom there, and I guess Ed wouldn't have gone there if he felt differently.
Right.
But they're not doing superhero books.
Right.
They're doing other things. And, you know, they're a new company, so they're going to hit a lot of walls here and there. But at the same time, they got a lot of cool stuff coming out. And, yeah. And you know, I see it personally. I see that the retailer's got to embrace them a little heavier.
Yeah, well, I mean, that's part of it. I mean, and we picked Dan Dare as our pick of the week because it just blew us away. And I know both Connor and I were really impressed by Doc Walloper. Of course, we're biased because we're both, you know, New Yorkers and fans of that time period. But I think I think it's filling a niche that isn't being really filled or addressed really well within comics. And you know, Image is doing some stuff. Oni does a little stuff like that. But I mean, but if you look at the situation, I mean, you're working on Jonah Hex, which is a Western, and you're working on this. And you're also working on Countdown, which is a big superhero crossover. I mean, do you think that's a sign that there's renewed health in the industry, that, you know, that creators can work on pretty much any type of book they don't want, and they don't just have to do the X-Men or Superman? Or
I think that, you know, we're funny creators because we want to do what we want to do.
Right.
I mean, I'd probably like to sit at home and write Painkiller Jane all week. And then I'd like to switch off and do the Western. You know, I'm fascinated by genres. But let's be honest, it's very, you know, if we look at 100 books come out each week,
right,
I'd say 90% of them are superhero books.
Yep.
You know, and we have that 10%, and the people who buy, you know, look, I look at a guy like you, where your buying tastes are, you looking for something different,
right?
Because you probably had superheroes coming out the wazoo.
Yep.
And I'm in that same boat.
Yeah.
I like the superheroes, but I really don't care what Spider-Man is doing. I really don't care, because I know 10 years from now I'll go back and it's still Spider-Man, you know?
Yeah.
So I'm fascinated by different ideas and different creators. I'm not loyal to any one company.
Right.
I'm loyal to whatever idea I think is cool, you know, and that's my buying thing. And I'm hoping, you know, people are, the age of DC versus Marvel is done.
Right.
You know, and my thing is, if you see a book that looks interesting, you buy it. I never go to the movies and say, I'm just going to see an MGM film. It never happened.
Yeah, Warner Brothers.
I just go, oh, that thing looks so cool. That trailer looks great. You know, I saw Atonement the other week, and that was like one of the best films I've seen this year. And yeah, I don't know who put it out. I can't tell you who put it out.
Right.
You know, so I'm hoping it goes that way. But I think there's a lot of room for genres. I've always tried to do different kind of genres. You know, Beautiful Killer and New West, and you know, Monolith even, and 21 Down. You know, I've worked on stuff that just doesn't. Yeah, maybe it's not a top 10 or a top 100 book, but you know, it's quality.
Well, and so do you kind of see taking that approach though? I mean, you know, I'm looking at the top 100 comics, you know, or at least according to Diamond, and it's just superhero, 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 like with the exception of maybe Buffy the Vampire Slayer, but that's kind of a superhero book.
Yeah.
You know, and so like with these different kinds of books, they've got to be created in order to get a chance in the market, but do you think that they have a future in the market?
I think they do. I think that, like myself and like yourself, I think eventually people want to try new things.
Right.
I think. I don't know. You know, I mean, I it's funny because, you know, you go on the internet and you read about Countdown and everybody's pissed off at it. And then I look at the numbers and it's selling 76,000. And I'm like, well, that's 76,000 pissed off people. You know, that's pretty good.
Yeah.
I need those pissed off people buying Jonah Hex and Doc Walloper, you know.
Yeah, yeah.
So you learn that the superhero fans are diehards,
right.
Okay, and they're never going to change. But they do try a new book once in a while. And the thing is that, you know, when we're publishing these new books, we just have to be different about them. You have to plan differently.
Right.
You have to say, you know what, we don't have the money we have on this other book. And if we sell 6,000, we should make it work that we can actually, I don't even say make a profit, I say break even,
right.
You know? And unfortunately, the genre books are just breaking even.
Right.
I think it takes a while. I hope there's room for it, because there was a time in the world when horror comics were huge, when action comics were huge. And, you know, I think there's a backlash of having all the media in the world available at your fingertips.
Yeah.
And that is that people tend to be overwhelmed and want to find something different,
right.
And search it out. But I don't know. I mean, I hope so, because I'll tell you the truth, you know, if it was up to me, I'd be just doing genre stuff.
Really?
Yeah, but, really? You know, I like the superhero stuff, but I always want to do crazy stuff with the superhero stuff.
Yeah, well, you know? Well, you don't want to do what everybody else has done before. I mean,
no,
like,
and when I do, you know, say things, I get that look. Mm. You know, like, you know, hey, I want Flash to get stuck on a line at the post office for like 3 hours, and then lose his mind. You know, and they're like, what? And I'm like, well, you know, because he's always running fast. You know, whatever. I don't really want to approach it, because there's great superhero writers, you know. It's like they don't need me.
Right.
You know, they need me on the weird stuff, the alternative stuff.
Right.
And I'm hoping it becomes common. I mean, at least on the internet, these kind of books are getting a lot more attention.
Yeah.
I think even, like, with this interview, I think maybe 5-10 people might give it a shot where they didn't before. And that's a success right there. I mean, I don't expect big numbers. I just expect to get a couple of people to try something they never have tried.
Yeah. Well, I mean, and like I said, that's the trick, is that it's like, it's got to start somewhere. And,
and
folks have to have faith in it and stick with it and not get discouraged, because it's not going to outsell X-Men right out of the gate, you know?
Exactly. We're a lot cooler than X-Men. I mean, let's be honest, you know, X-Men, you know, this is cool.
Yeah, it is. I mean, I gotta admit, I mean, I'm a big X-Men fan. That's where I came into, and I don't think I'll ever not be. But then at the same time, reading something like this, I mean, just in the setting and the story and even the art, I thought the art was really impressive in Doc Walloper, and it was different than anything else out there. So.
Oh, yeah. And you know, he's got an animation background, and it shows in the storytelling. Look, you know, and again, it's a different tale. It shouldn't look like a superhero comic.
Yep.
You know, and that's what Virgin's doing. They're trying to, you know, get in there, getting the wedge of that percentage pie of what things are selling, and make a mark. But they have a bigger picture as well, because bringing in Ed Burns on a thing like this, you know, Ed wants to make a film of this one day.
Right. Yeah.
So, and there's nothing wrong with that. I think that's kind of a cool idea, you know. So, you know, I just in the big picture, I just hope it legitimizes what we do.
Cool. So Doc Walloper issue one's out. What and I forget, is it a mini or how many issues?
It's 5 issues.
5 issues.
And yeah, we finished the 3rd issue. I'm working on a 4th one now.
Okay, cool, excellent. Why don't we start off just telling me, where did you get the idea for Doc Walloper, and what made you want to make it into a comic book as opposed to a movie or some other creative output?
Doc Walloper, originally, years ago, I wanted to make sort of an epic film set against the Irish-American gangs during Prohibition in New York. There's a character back then named Oney Madden, who was a street thug who rose the ranks to become the head of the Irish crime syndicate, and then was later ousted by the Italian families,
right.
And then retired someplace down south. So I always like that character arc, from basically, you know, street thug to crime lord. And then there was another great character from that time period, Jimmy Walker, who was the mayor of New York at the time, who was as crooked as any of the gangsters. I also was a big fan of William Kennedy's novel Legs, and, you know, the old Cagney and Bogey films from that time. So taking in all of those influences, I knew I wanted to make a film one day about that time period.
Right.
But anytime I sat down to think about what it would be, it just seemed like such a massive and expensive film that I never sat down to do it. And years later, my agent started working with the guys at Virgin Comics and suggested we sit down and have lunch with Gautam Chopra. And I gave some thought to, well, what would be the kind of comic book I would want to do? And I immediately thought, well, you know, I could never afford to make the film, this Prohibition era story, but, you know, comic book, you could certainly afford that. So I pitched them on a kind of loose take about a fictional Oney Madden character,
right.
You know, just a young thug who rises through the ranks. And they really dug it and said, well, why don't you flesh it out a little bit? And, you know, once I, the first draft, quite honestly, was like almost too historically accurate. And they suggested, like, well, don't worry about, you know, it's a comic book. Don't worry about that. Have a little bit more fun with the characters and the world. And that's when I started to think, well, all right, well, given that it's a comic book, what great landmark can I resurrect? So, you know, we brought in the old Penn Station that was torn down.
Cool.
We've resurrected the Third Avenue elevated train, the West Side Docks, back when New York was a massive shipping port.
Right.
So I started to incorporate those things into the story. And then, you know, on their suggestion, they said, well, is there anything you can add to these characters to give them not only superhuman strength, but just a heightened or exaggerated ability?
Right.
You know, and on the waterfront, there's a great scene with Eva Marie Saint's father where he's describing how one of his arms is longer than the other because of swinging that hook at on the docks for 40 years. And I thought, oh, well, maybe instead of a long arm, our hero has a big hand that was deformed from whether fighting on the docks and also loading the docks, or maybe it was crushed in an accident on the docks. And, you know, he's got this disfigured massive hand that's also a bit of his Achilles heel. It gets sensitive after he gives somebody a good ass kicking. And that's kind of, you know, the long answer to kind of how it was born. I mean, one thing I should say is on the very first meeting I had with Virgin, I said, you know, I would be more interested in creating the comic book if we could also think about like this as a film. Like, let's do our version of 300. You know, we can take this historical setting, have it loosely based on a historical event or time period, but let's think about using the book as kind of a storyboard for a massive CGI film.
Right.
And they love the idea of doing that. So, you know, that's been our intention since sort of day one.
Cool. Yeah. So you're crafting the story and the approach to it with the you know, trying to make it right for the comic book, but also eventually going to the film medium. Or
I mean, basically, you know, after all this, I created an outline for what I thought was a screenplay, and then they helped me do all those things I just told you about. But then they were like, well, you know, a screenplay is three acts. This is going to be five issues, and each issue needs certain sort of cliffhangers and other things. You need to introduce certain characters on certain pages. So, you know, with their help, and really Jimmy was a big help with me, sort of saying, all right, well, look, you're not going to need this scene. This scene will be great in your movie, but you don't need it for the comic book.
Right.
Because get rid of that. We need to.
That was one thing I was what we were curious about, because with your background as a filmmaker and as a writer of film, you know, how hard of the transition into the comic script was there from the film script? Because, you know, like you said, you've got economy of space in terms of each issue. You've got 22 pages, and the flow is a little different than film, right?
Yeah.
Well,
two things. I mean, one, you know, they gave me a great team to work with, and a guy, you know, Jimmy immediately hit it off, and, you know, already have developed sort of this shorthand when we're talking about the issues. And it's weird because I'd never really collaborated with anyone before, and I thought it'd be much more resistant to suggestions, especially suggestions of making cuts. But given that it's a medium that I'd never done before, and I don't really know it intimately, it was an eye-opening experience. It's been a great experience. It's also for me as a writer, because I'm not writing the dialogue, Jimmy is, it's kind of taken the cuffs off of me in a way. I'm writing sort of like not only bigger scenes and big set pieces, but bigger plot points. You know, when you do my sort of small dialogue-driven character pieces, you know, the plot only moves by what people are saying or not saying within a scene.
Right.
You know, now not having to worry about that, it's just it's bigger plot shifts and bigger turns in the narrative than anything I've done before.
Right, and I imagine there's a lot more action, you know, because, I mean, in the first issue, you get that big shootout and all that kind of stuff, and I've seen your movies, and there are not many shootouts and action scenes in your movies. So.
Yeah, the most action I've directed is somebody running their mouth off.
Exactly.
But I have to admit, like, it's helped me almost fall in love with storytelling again.
Yeah.
You know, I've been doing my kind of thing for 12 years, and doing that, there's a safety in that comfort level. Being forced to do something I'm uncomfortable with has made me a better storyteller now.
So your next movie is going to be a big action budget kind of thing with just the tighter storyline, or?
It's funny. The next one is, let's say, somewhere in between.
Oh yeah, cool.
It's definitely. Yeah, it's a remake of a Japanese film called Rainy Dog that's about a hitman who is has his 10-year-old son dumped on his
cool.
One morning. Yeah, it's pretty cool.
So in working on Doc Wahlberg, I mean, how, you know, I know you're from New York, Jimmy's from New York, us at iFanboy are from New York as well, and we're big on New York history. How much, you know, research and stuff like that went into, I mean, it sounds like you know the people of the time pretty well and the city pretty well. Were you, you know, did you have to hit the books prior to, you know, sitting down and writing it, or how much of that was based on reality, really?
You know, I had been reading a book called Low Life at the time when I was working on this, so Low Life informed it, even though it's about 40 years earlier. There's a great book called Paddywhacked that I was pretty familiar with that dealt with sort of just the history of the Irish-American gangster, you know, not only the New York gangsters, but Chicago and New Orleans. Yeah. So, you know, I also borrowed names of gangsters from that time period in the books that I found. Like, as I mentioned, Oney Madden. There's also Mad Dog Cole. So we combined their names to make Mad Dog Madden. You know, Diamond Jack is a version of Legs Diamond, only we now who was rumored to have worked with the Italians. So now we have him as an Irish guy working with the Italians. Our mayor, Bo James, was a nickname that the mayor in New York had, Jimmy Walker. Yeah. So I was pretty familiar with it, but, you know, once I started to dig in, I kind of dug out a lot of the books I already had to kind of just look for some sort of fun homages I might be able to have paid to the time period, right, and the real gangsters of the era.
Right. So why do you think ultimately that the Italians were able to usurp the Irish in New York?
You know what? I think because, according to this book, Paddywhacked, and they talk about how when the Italians, who had been working with Oney Madden and the Irish mob, they decided to no longer work with them because the Irish had the cops, and they had City Hall, and they didn't think that they should have the booze as well.
Interesting.
So it was like, you know, you can't have all three.
Right.
And that's kind of the there's a big powwow apparently down in Atlantic City between all of the organized crime organizations. And that was sort of apparently where it was decided that the Italians were going to move Oney Madden and the Irish out.
Wow. Interesting.
Yeah.
I
who knows how much of that is true. I mean,
yeah.
It also could do with, you know, we got here, you know, 1840s through the turn of the century. The Italians came a little later. You know, and it's, you know, the newer immigrants are always a little hungrier and given less opportunities and that sort of thing.
Right. Yeah, no, it's fascinating because my family is on the Italian side of things, and so I've always been fascinated by the history of that, and the different families and all that kind of stuff. So it's really interesting within comics because typically people think comic books, superheroes, capes and tights, but there's a growing kind of section of comics that are primarily kind of creator owned or kind of similar to the kind of creator you are with by writing and growing your own property up, but are focusing on less kind of cliche type comic books, and this one kind of fits right in there with this kind of not true but crime story and period piece.
Yeah.
and we're seeing more and more of that come up within comics. Is that something that I know you're probably not that familiar with the comic book industry, but is that something you were aware of upon planning this or something you were shooting for?
I wasn't certainly 300 and Sin City. Yeah. Just hearing I have to admit, prior to Sin City, I was not familiar with Frank Miller.
Yeah.
But then hearing about these graphic novels, that really piqued my interest in I had no idea that there was a sort of a more adult audience out there for an adult comic book.
Yeah.
And given the way movies are going and also given what you can do now with CGI, I just saw Beowulf and I look at that and I'm like, all right, perfect example of the source material. They held on to a little bit of it, but didn't really concern themselves too much with it. But it's such a fun ride that that's why people go to the movies. So seeing that, I started to get turned on to the idea of, oh wait, create your own comic book, and then you can you can recreate that that movie you want to see.
Cool. So it sounds like your first comic book experience has been pretty positive. Is it something that you think you'd want to do again or?
I had such a good time doing this. There's a prequel that I want to do. Cool. to the Doc Walloper. There's a cop that we introduce in issue number 3, and he's really only in it for a little bit, which we did intentionally. That's the next book I want to do and take that cop back to 1905 New York.
Yeah.
And do a story of the cops in New York back then.
Cool. So that'd be rad. That'd be excellent. So what has been the most in this whole process of creating a comic book and seeing it get released, what's been the most surprising thing that's happened? Surprised by the reaction, or has anything happened unexpectedly or?
They did some wild posting in New York of the, an advertisement for the comic book.
Yeah.
Sort of walked down the street in Manhattan, and I didn't even know, I wasn't aware they were doing that. That was pretty sick and pretty cool.
Cool.
And I think it's like, again, it's weird, I've made films, and that's a pretty incredible experience to see something you've written projected on a screen, but right. When I got the first issue of the comic book, myself included with some of my friends, we were kind of like, holy shit, that is really cool, I don't know why it's a little bit more tangible than, than a DVD of your movie, but it, it just is.
Yeah. Did you read any comics as a kid or growing up? Aside from what you've seen,
recently? Yeah, I was Spider-Man, yeah. Fantastic Four were the two books I was into as a kid.
Yeah.
By the time I was in junior high, I was kind of just a sports junkie and was just obsessed with basketball.
Yeah.
And I would say only recently, Sin City kind of sparked my interest back into comics.
Cool. Well, like I said, we really enjoyed the first issue of Doc Walloper, and we're looking forward to the rest of the series and whatever else you come up with. So it seems to be a pretty cool thing that's coming out at the right time.
All right, man. Well, thank you. That was a good talk.
Awesome, cool. Ed. Well, thanks so much for your time, and best of luck with the book, and hopefully we'll talk to you again in the future.
All right, man. Thanks again.